Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios here in Cumming, Georgia, it's time for Stewarding Family Wealth. And now, here's your host.
Good afternoon. This is Randy Brunson with Centurion Advisory Group on this episode of Stewarding Family Wealth. And in the studio with us for the second episode is Melissa Libby. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you, Randy.
Glad you were with us today. I know in our previous episode, we just talked about the journey of life and LaGrange and Richmond and Adopt a Golden and Grady School of Journalism, all kinds of cool stuff. On this episode, I would love to learn more because you have been a business owner for 30 years.
That's right.
So for those who may not have caught the first episode, tell us about Melissa Libby & Associates. What does a firm do? What do they specialize in? Those kinds of things.
Okay. Well, we are a communications agency, and we specialize in restaurants. So okay. We get the word out about restaurants from fast casual to fine dining, single unit to large chains, everything in between. We let people know about the restaurants so that they can go and
good
there.
So communications, promotion, public relations. Hey, we're here. Come, new menu, new chef. Grant, new opening, just or ongoing communications and
that's right.
Promotion. Outstanding.
We eat and drink for a living.
Good, good, good. eat and drink for a living.
That's what I tell people at cocktail parties. I eat and drink for a living.
That works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What a great life.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So the 30 years, started in the early 90s. So let's talk about restaurants in Atlanta and what you've seen over the last 30 years just with the restaurant scene in Atlanta. You mentioned in our first episode that when you first got started, you got off to a quick start, but what restaurants looked like and who was here and how it worked in Atlanta was very different in 92 than it is in whatever year this is, 2022.
Right, exactly.
So what was the restaurant scene in 92 and what have you seen change over the last 30 years?
Wow, it's been an amazing change. The restaurant scene in 1992 was old school restaurants. They were, you know, mostly owned and operated restaurants. They weren't chains of any sort. And they were, you know, continental cuisine. They were fancy. You dressed up to go there. There weren't a lot of them. And it was, you know, just kind of staid and but, you know, that's what we were used to. Mm-hmm. But as we got closer and closer to the Olympics, more people started thinking about putting a restaurant in Atlanta from other cities. Just having restaurants in general became more of a thing than it did. And so by 96, we had a pretty decent group of restaurants, shall we say, of good places to go. And we started mixing in the more casual nature. And then as time went on, the rise of the, and I don't want to say celebrity chef because that came a little bit later, but people that used to work in the kitchens of these old restaurants kind of quote unquote grew up and started their own restaurants with their own ideas and from their travels or from, you know, cookbooks that they've read or whatever. And so it really became very more chef-centric. And then that, again, over time, that became a phenomenon, you know, across the country. And celebrity chefs sort of, you know, became a thing with all the TV shows out there. So it's very different. Since the pandemic, I've seen a little bit of a It's kind of gone both ways. I saw a little bit of a tightening up and people going smaller with their restaurants again and getting more singularly focused about what it was that they offered. But I also have seen some new people with some big ideas having the opportunity to bring those to light. So it'll be very interesting the next 5 or 10 years to see, you know, what sticks around and what has to pivot, as we say.
Yes. What is it now? I'm curious because we've been here for not quite 40 years, but you know, quite a while, mm-hmm. and seen a lot of changes. So, fine dining restaurant. what's the average life expectancy of an idea or a theme in a restaurant? Any feel for that just based on your experience?
Well, it depends on if they have good PR or not.
You're exact. I'm so glad I asked that question. And if they're struggling with that, yeah, they probably should look you up.
Yeah, somebody they can call. Yeah. No. You know, that, I would have to look. The Georgia Restaurant Association has some stats, and it's unfortunately, you know, something like 50% of all restaurants don't make it a year, something like that.
Right.
And then the rest of them don't make it 3 years, and then a little sliver, you know, make it a while. And right. But I don't see that, and I'm not touting my services here. I don't see that with my clients, and I don't see that with the restaurants that I'm familiar with. They do tend to stand the test of time. I mean, Aria Restaurant's been around 20 plus years. Canoe has been around 20 years, right. You know, it just sort of depends on who's behind it and what their willingness is to be flexible with the times and give people what they want. It's just like any other business, you know, you right. have to give your clients what they want. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over.
That's right.
Again.
That's right. And you know, you make a good point. I don't know that the success or failure rate of a restaurant is any different than that of any other business.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, the Small Business Association and any number of other organizations track that kind of detail.
Right.
And the stats you shared sounded to me like they're right in line with all the businesses, you know, very high percentage in the first 12 months and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, that 5-year mark seems to be a deal, and those that go 10 years, it's an even bigger deal. So
right.
Congratulations to you, 30 years in. That's
thank you.
That's outstanding. So, all right. So just what are the two or three things, if you think back over your years of working with clients and hiring people and running a business and making decisions, if you had to settle on two or three things that you had learned that matter, what would they be? I just decided to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
you know?
Thanks.
No worries.
Well, you know, I wish that I had trusted my gut a little bit more. I think I do that really well now, but I think in those early years, even if I got a bad vibe about somebody, I would be more interested in securing their business than worrying about the vibe. And of course, that would come back to, you know, remind me later that I should have listened to my gut. So I don't think you can discount that. I don't think that's woo-woo. I think there's a reason that you have a bad feeling or a good feeling about people and projects and even if you don't know why exactly you have that feeling, you need to listen to it. So that's definitely something that I've learned over time. And I've also learned to hire more quickly than you think you can afford. That was something that I just about wore myself out before I hired my first employee. And I still, hopefully not now, but certainly in the recent past, have been in a situation where I really needed to hire another person, but I just didn't want to pay the salary. I just, right. you know, just didn't want to take that. And it's like, the minute you do it and they get in the groove and they're doing a good job, you're like, oh my gosh, how did I do without this?
Yeah.
So, I think those are two things that I've learned over time that I've tried to remind myself of.
Yeah. I know you and I have talked about that over the years, just that, both of those probably, but especially the first one, because, you know, early on, I will tell you what I did. And I think you referenced this. When you're first starting, if someone says, hey, we need help, and they'll stroke you a check that'll clear the bank, it's like, okay,
they're
sign
in.
Me up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Let's go. And you're right. And you've probably mastered this at this point. But yeah, if you walk into a situation, you get a phone call, you're on a Zoom call with someone, or you have face-to-face, you and your team with a potential client, and you listen and you look around, and it's like, whatever that thing is, like, no, we don't want to play here. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you step away. It's like, no, we're not going to do this.
Yeah. And we put little emoji red flags on our Slack channel if we're on different phone calls and we're getting the bad vibe. We start put the flag up.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this isn't a good sign. This isn't good.
Yeah. Yeah. And your team, they understand that. They buy
do.
Into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think at first they may have been a little afraid to say, ooh, this doesn't feel good, you know, because you don't want to say that to the boss. Right. But because I'm quick to say it, then now they're quick to say it too. Good. Yeah.
Sort of your assent there gives them permission to chime in and those kind of things. That's interesting on hiring. That is what there's a friend of mine named Donna. Donna is not quite 80 yet, but she's in her late 70s. You may have met her somewhere along the way. I don't recall anymore. One of the stories Donna tells is that she took a master's degree in computer science from Georgia Tech in the 70s.
Wow.
She did her undergrad at Transylvania up in Kentucky. All right, then moved to Atlanta, went to work for Norfolk Southern. She's been retired for 20 years, but she took a master's in math or a master's in computer science. I'd have to go back and look. Back in the 70s. All right, and the story Donna tells, of course, at that time, the student population at Tech was 90% men, 10%
sure.
women. And the classroom building that she was in, classes were generally on the fourth floor. There was one ladies' restroom in the entire building.
Ugh.
It was on the first floor.
Wow.
Okay. Well, much different 50 years ago than now. But that's just the change over the decades.
Right.
So I share that story to ask you, what I mean, as a business owner engaging with all kinds of people from all over the country, all over the world, what's been the experience? Has it you've generally been accepted, or the things you've sort of had to ignore? And I've heard Donna tell all kinds of stories where she worked in a 100% man's world.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so she developed both a thick skin and ability just to blow stuff off, just whatever,
yeah.
you know, to ignore people. But what's been your experience?
Yeah. You know, personally, I think I certainly give people the benefit of the doubt. And if somebody, you know, says something a little, I'm pretty optimistic and believe that they didn't mean any
sure.
you know, harm by
right.
it. I've had moments, you know, where I was like, really? I can't believe. But I'm very protective of my employees,
mm-hmm.
and I will not tolerate what I'll tolerate for myself, I will not tolerate for them. And I've certainly had to have conversations over the years with clients about not speaking a certain way or not using certain language with certain employees. And you know, people tend to get it, but the restaurant industry, you know, has had a big moment here in the past few years where chefs have, you know, it's come out that people like Mario Batali, who we all celebrated, you know, was an awful, awful person. And unfortunately, no one was surprised about that. And we all know that restaurant kitchens are very, very difficult for women in particular. And I have seen my clients and other people in the industry 100% clean up their act. And they know that it's, and again, I think they came about it, you know, just out of ignorance. And you know, I have a soft spot for that. I don't think they're mean people. I think they just did, they acted the way they had seen, you know, they had been treated in the past or had seen women treated in the past. But it's been very interesting in the past few years how that is just not happening as far as, I mean, I'm sure it happens somewhere, but not right. to my knowledge. And I do not believe it happens at my clients' restaurants because I know all of them have really made a commitment to it. And because of that, you see more women working up the ranks in restaurants and more women becoming chef owners. And so it's been really good. But those women have some tales to tell for sure. I've been on the periphery as the PR person, so I haven't really suffered as much.
Yeah. But you're right. You mentioned conversations with your employees, and yes, you're right. I've learned, well, first of all, I won't tolerate. I remember one very specific situation. This goes back probably, I don't know, 15 years or so. And we had a young lady at the office, just completely delightful, who was part of our team. And she had client relationship management responsibilities. And there was a gentleman by the name of George. And, you know, George had taken a couple of hits in his business life and some things like this. And it had sort of affected his outlook, you know, mm-hmm. where he just sort of was a down-in-the-dumps kind of personality, unfortunately. There was once he sort of kind of took it out on this young lady where he just was very rude, I call it rude, crude, and socially unacceptable.
Right.
And she told me about it, and I called him. I said, George, I said,
that's right.
Yeah. No, this is going to happen. And you get a pass. If it happens again, we have right. to terminate. I've got to take care of my people. I've got right. to protect my people. And unfortunately, and he was all, you know, because they're always nice to you.
Right, right.
Right? They're always nice to you. But they, for whatever reason, they feel like they can get away with stuff sometimes once there's people, mm-hmm. Whatever it is. And in this case, it happened again. And so I just called George and said, hey, appreciate the opportunity to have served, but, you know, we're going to separate ways. Yeah. And because, yeah, you've got to take care of your people.
Right. So,
anything else you've learned in business over the years?
I mean, I've learned so much.
Do you remember, something I remember, I don't know what year this was, maybe 2016, 2017, I don't remember anymore, but all business is cycle. You've seen this, you know, mm-hmm. revenue grows and then it's off year and it grows. And just, that's the journey, okay? There's this ebb and flow of business and life, and it was an off year, maybe for the restaurant industry, for MLA, whatever. And you had really worked to maintain your staff without cutting any, mm-hmm. without laying anyone off. In fact, it was the story I remember was around Thanksgiving, and you were doing the equivalent of digging around the couch cushions to
yes.
find
money,
money to meet payroll. You know, you were like going to the office to see if any checks had come in to cover payroll. And probably anyone that's listening that's owned a business that started it from scratch like this. Has had this experience.
Absolutely.
You've got to cover payroll. You're excited about the future, but the cash just isn't
yes.
coming together well, right? At that particular moment. I've been there. You've been there. And you got it covered. And then, but you had gone out of your way to maintain all your team in spite of just some tough business cycle, mm-hmm. right? And then I think within 30 or 60 days, one of the people you'd worked to maintain came and turned in their notice.
Right. Yes.
I remember that thing. So what did you, as a result of that, what have you decided about like staffing and business cycles and some things like that?
Well, you can't keep people on if you don't have the revenue to, you know, to justify it. And right. I definitely have learned that lesson. And I think, I guess it was in 2008 that I really got smart when everything was, you know, really, and I guess this might've been happening during that time too. I right. can't remember now, but, you know, we just all had to really tighten our belts. And, you know, I learned that you could call the phone company and say, hey, I can't, you know, pay this fee anymore. And they go, okay, we'll cut it in half, you know, in the copier place, you know, everybody cut our fees just because we asked them to. And I was like, well, what kind of fools are we? And then I started noticing, well, I was a fool too, because I was giving my employees credit cards and not really, you know, I mean, they weren't charging anything they weren't supposed to, but they were certainly freely charging the things that they were supposed to, let us say. And so I just learned back then that you've just got to be more careful and more, you know, specific about how you spend your money. And that includes, you know, unfortunately staffing. And so my thing now is that I really try to have contractors, really good contractors who I've known, and many of them are former employees who left to have kids or, you know, just didn't want to work 40 hours a week. And so they're great people and they know me, and I can be, you know, as big as I need to be with them, or I can be as small as I need to be with my core team. And it just gives me, you know, really helps me sleep at night that I'm not overspending on people.
So let's say I want to celebrate my anniversary.
Oh no, here we go. What's your favorite restaurant?
And I just, it's a special year. And let's say it's my 45th. That's actually in my rearview mirror at this point. But let's say it's one of those meaningful anniversaries. And I just want it to be a really special event for Teresa and some things like this. Are there two or three places in the city that you think might serve that purpose really well?
For sure. I mean, Aria is always one of my go-to restaurants. It is our client. It's been our client for over 20 years. And there's a reason that it's been there for 20 years and continues to be successful. And that's because Jerry Klaskala, who is the owner and the chef, is in the kitchen every single night making your food.
So the owner's in the kitchen every night.
Absolutely.
Making it happen.
Right. They're not open on Sunday and Monday, so those are his 2 days off. And he works Tuesday through Saturday, and he is making your food, and it is delicious. And so that's just in the staff. All the staff members have been there forever, you know, so they're great, and they know you. And if they don't know you, they know how to treat you well for an anniversary. You know, they're just
okay
career servers, and it's just it's just 100% my go-to restaurant.
Cool. Thank you for that, because you know those are the things that when I pull up the Open Table app, right?
Right.
Or whatever. Those are the kinds of things that you just don't know when you're scanning all those right. promotional things. It's, okay, what's this and what's this about and how long have they been there? You know, your serve staff, because the customers, their first experience
right.
Is first, you know, with the host or hostess that seats you, but basically with the wait staff. You know, and what's been their experience and how well have they been trained, or you know, all those kind of things. So that's outstanding.
Yeah.
And the fact the owner's in the kitchen just doing yeah. what he enjoys.
Exactly. You know? And that's really hard to find.
Yeah.
It's really hard to yeah. find.
Good, 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 good. All right. Well, Melissa, thank you again for joining us here for these last two episodes. Thank you for sharing your insight and your wisdom with us. And anything we can do to help you, you know where to find us. But again, for those of you listening in podcast land, thanks for joining us today for this second episode with Melissa. You can learn more about her if you just look up Melissa Libby. You'll learn everything you need to know. It's she's good with her own social media. So thanks again for tuning in to Stewarding Family Wealth. We appreciate your time. And Amanda Pierce with Forsyth Business Radio X, thank you. We always appreciate you.